Blessed are the weird people.
Poets.
Misfits.
Painters.
Writers.
Troubadours.
For they teach us to see the world through different eyes.
This is Blessed Are the Weird on Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Here's your host, Jacob Nordby.
Hello, my friends. Hello, wherever you find yourself in the world today. I'm Jacob Nordby. This is Blessed Are the Weird radio show on the Empower Network. And I'm just thrilled to have you join us today for this very special Friday the 13th, extremely lucky episode into blessed weirdness. And as you might know, I work from home. And so don't always take care of personal grooming first thing in the morning because no one's really here to see what I'm up to. But today, because of this show, I got up and cleaned up and shaved and groomed. And so I have this very special guest joining us today, and I'm just excited to have her with us. So without a whole lot of introduction, I do have with us Oriah Mountain Dreamer. She's a storyteller and a poet. Most of you listening probably have come in contact with her work, but those of you who haven't, she wrote the book The Invitation. She wrote The Dance, The Call, and several other books, and she is working on some more right now, which most of us just eagerly await. So, Oriah, thank you so much for being with us today. Welcome to the show.
My pleasure, Jacob, and thank you for shaving.
Yes. Well, I'm all clean. You know, it's kind of like I shaved my legs for this, so we better just really do a... So happy to have you with us, Oriah. And, you know, it's funny, I've been in contact now with your work for a while, and actually for years. And so I feel like this is a conversation I've been having with you for a long time, actually. And the fact is, I've never spoken with you before today in by voice. So I'm just thrilled to make your acquaintance.
Oh, well, thank you. It's lovely. And a writer always loves to hear that people feel they're having a conversation when they're reading.
Yeah. Well, your work in particular, you know, I shared with you before the show, I'm finally actually reading some of your books, which is I can't believe that didn't happen before, but your work in particular makes me feel like we're sitting down after, you know, a long week perhaps, and just sort of comparing notes from the road. I'm reading The Invitation right now and just about through with it, and it has that feeling for me.
Actually, I'm writing this down because suddenly I'm collecting titles right now for some of the new writing. Notes from the Road would make a great title.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you say that. I've used that phrase a lot because I've just come to see myself and all of the people in my life, whether I know them in person or just have connected with them some other way, as fellow travelers. In fact, you know, Oriah, I titled today's show Beautiful, Gentle, Ruthless Quest, as I've read your book, and there's something in that show title which sort of suggests the idea of seeking for something, for the big answer with a capital T. And I'm curious, while we get this started, in just a moment I want to have you, if you'd be so kind as to read or recite, I'm sure you probably know it by heart by now, but your initial poem, The Invitation. But I'd love to hear you tell us a bit about this quest, what it is to spend a lifetime of inquiring into the sacred mystery.
You know, I'm infinitely curious, and I think that was always true, and about pretty much everything. I mean, you know, I'm one of these people who is always asking the questions that, you know, things like, why is it warmer when it snows than it was the day before? Is it warm because it's snowing, or does it snow because it's a little bit warmer? And you know, questions that have no real impact on my life. But of course, I have more passion for those that do have an impact. And also, I have more access to information, although sometimes it doesn't seem so, about my inner world than I sometimes have about anything else. So, you know, some of it is just this endless curiosity about why do I and other people do what we do? Why do we make the choices that we make? Why do we have this experience of something larger than ourselves? Is that just delusion? Is it, you know, something we make up to comfort ourselves in the night, which is not my experience? But, you know, it's a question sort of worth asking. And what do I know for sure? And, of course, the further I go down this path, a good piece of it is discovering the enormity of what I don't know. So then the question becomes, how do we live with that? How do we live with the enormity of what we can't know?
It's a
and
fascinating...
still live, you know, still live close to the bone. And I guess what I would say is that the center of my quest is to live intimately with myself, with others, with the world. I mean, as close as I can get to what does this moment hold?
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, you know, Araya, I spent my young life in a very perfectionistic, fundamentalist Christian environment. And there was this absolute truth feeling. And I remember the first time I started to, well, it wasn't the first time, but many times started to peek outside that. The edges got a little frayed, so I sort of saw outside of the shell, which had been so safe and solid. And I remember feeling both invited and terrified by, as you call it, the enormity of all of it, of this mystery. And I remember then leaving that safety and going out looking for the next big safety and finding it, and then finding out that the edges on that also got frayed. And so life kept asking me to go forward. Have you discovered that as well?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I do think often at some point people come to a bit of a crisis with that as we catch on to the fact that there is no absolute safety. You know, that this is the nature of life is a kind of, I mean, I'm not suggesting we don't learn things. We do. But then we realize the limits of what we've learned and that there's a whole piece of life outside of what we've just learned. And honestly, I think at that point we generally unconsciously either decide to start loving the questions or we start pulling back and making our life smaller.
Yes. Yes. Wow. And what happens when we pull back and make our life smaller? What is the experience of that? Because I know you've worked with people all over and have noticed people taking either approach.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, a friend and I used to laugh and they call this hunker medicine. We hunker on down, you know. We try to hang on to what we've got. And of course, the irony is, I mean, everything we know in this life, everything we cherish, everything we hold dear to us in terms of people and places and our memories, both my parents have Alzheimer's, right? So I'm all too aware that the memories we hold dear can go also. And so there is this all-pervasive impermanence in this lifetime. And that's a tough one to come to terms with. I mean, we say we do, because we get it intellectually. But, you know, watching it happen, feeling it happen, knowing that there are pieces that we don't even get to decide at times what the rate of that impermanence is or, you know, when something may be over. I have a friend whose husband died this year, perfectly healthy man, 57 years old, dropped dead of an aneurysm. You know? Mm-hmm. So, and that kind of thing just, you know, reminds us we have no idea.
Yeah.
No idea. So what kind of source within us, around us, do we need to draw on to go out every day, to get up every day and let our hearts be open, being conscious of the fact that we don't know. We don't know if this is our last day or what else is going to happen or, you know, just that enormity. And that's, you know, not to do that, to hunker on down and say, well, I'm just going to, you know, stick to what I know. The problem is it doesn't work. Aside from the fact that you close off all kinds of potential areas of exploration and learning, it also doesn't work. It doesn't keep you safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the frightening reality, isn't it? Is the more we hunker, doesn't drive the mystery away, does it?
No, it's not like I'm not going to age another day if I just hunker down with everything I know now. You know, it's just not going to work.
You know, Araya, my oldest son is he's 16 and he's a budding intellectual, fascinating to be his father and be with him on his own journey. But he recently went digging around to the school library and read a book. He read Descartes. And I got so excited when he said that. I started telling him all about Descartes. And then I stopped myself and asked, would you please tell me what you know about Descartes? And so he did. He was able to, you know, explain the four maxims very nicely. And I said, Nathan, you know the one beautiful thing about Descartes and how much influence he's had is we've taken his scientific method, this process, and we've married it so deeply that we feel like we can slice and dice everything down and analyze it. And I said, what's beautiful is at the end of each one of these paths of knowledge, no matter how far we go, there's always more mystery.
Well, and the other big one with Descartes, I mean, I should warn you, I was a philosophy major.
Oh, good.
It's the complete separation of mind and body.
Mm.
Right? I am because I think.
Yeah.
So the separation, the split between spirit and matter, mind and body, I mean, I'm not putting this all in Descartes' shoulders, but certainly he was the one who made it explicit.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're living with a pretty serious legacy of that idea being so pervasive in the culture. You know, we see it in the way we treat the earth. We somehow think we can do things to the earth and it won't impact our bodies. It's just not happening.
Yeah. Well, Araya, one thing that's been so refreshing, and I remember I think it was a Facebook note you wrote at one point. You said something about, you know, having experienced some kind of energy work or something, and you said how you approach all of these things with a great deal of skepticism, and yet you maintain this balance between being willing to be open to all of these wonderful experiences and also be skeptical of them and of the story. And I'm really interested in that because that seems like a very difficult balance to maintain.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'm helped in this in a number of ways. I have two sons who are rigorously intellectually honest, you know, and so they will press for, you know, I think where we get into trouble is we can be really clear about what our experience is, but it's the explanation that gets slapped on that we want to kind of question a little bit more sometimes, you know. And I feel us reach for things that we can't know, and I understand it completely, because we want some comfort, right? So if you take a very popular idea in the New Age community, everything happens for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is where the philosopher in me does come out. Are we talking first cause reason, everything being caused? Yes, in a material reality, it's cause and effect. It's, of course, a huge mishmash of elements that we often don't know everything about. But this suggestion that everything that happens to you in your life or happens around you, you know, was orchestrated somehow, and bringing that together with some reasonable explanation for your experience of having some free will choice is an interesting one. And I admit that I have a frustration with a lack of kind of rigor around these things, so that people kind of throw them out there, and I go, so, you know, what does that mean? And people, when pressed, some people will say, for instance, that when I was a young woman, I was raped. I learned a great deal from that, and I've been able to use that in work I do with women who are raped, but I would never say that something larger than me or within me orchestrated the rape so I could do that work. We can learn from anything and everything if we choose to. But then claiming in hindsight, well, that's why that happened. Somebody orchestrated. Someone actually suggested to me that my soul and the soul of the man who raped me had an agreement, and he had agreed to rape me to teach me what I needed to learn. I just think I think it's garbage, but I also think it's claiming something we can't possibly know. We can't know it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm pretty, rigorous about asking people when they make statements what it means to them. What do they think that means, and what are the consequences for that in terms of their own responsibility in their own lives for their own choices or other people's responsibilities? So, you know, I have incredible experiences, and I worked in a shamanic tradition. I still do on a daily practice basis, where things I can't explain occur all the time. But the older I get, the less comfortable I am with slapping an explanation on those.
Yeah, well, that's, and this one of the designations. So the blessed or the weird thing, you know, and misfits, mystics, writers, painters, troubadours, and I added the word heretics at one point, Araya. And you clearly are a heretic because you don't fit nicely in some of these different communities, do you?
No, but it is my ongoing prayer to express, you know, to not hedge on the questions I have, without being, you know, with being as kind and clear at the same time is always my ongoing quest, you know, not falling into something derogatory, but, you know, sort of challenging us to think about what we're saying and what it means.
You know, I remember ironing my shirts for church when I was a young man and listening to tapes I had gotten at the library, Oriah. And I remember listening to Carolyn Mace's Sacred Contracts on tape and starching my church shirts. And I remember being blown away by the notions she was talking about. And what I came to with that was, well, I can't know for sure about this concept, but I do love the idea. How would it change my life if it were true? So I don't have to accept
exactly.
it as truth, but how would, and you know what? It's interesting. That has actually been a really neat effect.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, you know, human beings are meaning-making creatures. And we work with symbols all the time, and we work with story all of the time. That's what we're doing. So I really encourage people to start looking at things like that. So, in the shamanic tradition I come from, we work a lot with dreams. But if something happens on the tonal, on the physical plane, something unusual, I will often think to myself, if this was a dream, what do I think it would mean? Mm. And, you know, without having to make a decision about it's a sign someone has orchestrated, you know, But taking it as the possibility of meaning, of insight, if I think of myself as having a sacred contract with the people, the family I was born into, and given everything that happened there, what might that have been about, you know? So I have no problem with doing that. I have a problem with people saying to someone else, well,
yes.
you and the guy who raped you must have had a sacred contract, right?
Yes, yes.
That's not helpful.
Yes, yes. Yes, thank you. That's great. You know, I'm just getting notes from the producer that our time is running very quickly here, and I want to make sure and get this, Oriah, because I sort of assume that everyone listening, maybe everyone in the world, has heard or read your poem, The Invitation, and I would love it if you're willing. Would you mind sharing that with us right now?
I'd be happy to. Absolutely. It doesn't interest me what you do for a living. I want to know what you ache for and if you dare to dream of meeting your heart's longing. It doesn't interest me how old you are. I want to know if you will risk looking like a fool for love, for your dream, for the adventure of being alive. It doesn't interest me what planets are squaring your moon. I want to know if you have touched the center of your own sorrow, if you have been opened by life's betrayals or have become shriveled and closed from fear of further pain. I want to know if you can sit with pain, mine or your own, without moving to hide it or fade it or fix it. I want to know if you can be with joy, mine or your own, if you can dance with wildness and let the ecstasy fill you to the tips of your fingers and toes without cautioning us to be careful, to be realistic, to remember the limitations of being human. It doesn't interest me if the story you are telling me is true. I want to know if you can disappoint another to be true to yourself, if you can bear the accusation of betrayal and not betray your own soul, if you can be faithless and therefore trustworthy. I want to know if you can see beauty, even when it's not pretty, every day, and if you can source your own life from its presence. I want to know if you can live with failure, yours and mine, and still stand on the edge of the lake and shout to the silver of the full moon, yes. It doesn't interest me to know where you live or how much money you have. I want to know if you can get up after the night of grief and despair, weary and bruised to the bone, and do what needs to be done to feed the children. It doesn't interest me who you know or how you came to be here. I want to know if you will stand in the center of the fire with me and not shrink back. It doesn't interest me where or what or with whom you have studied. I want to know what sustains you from the inside when all else falls away. I want to know if you can be alone with yourself and if you truly like the company you keep in the empty moments.
Thank you so much for reading that with us, Oriah.
My
that
pleasure.
Is beautiful. And I know you've heard probably tens of thousands of times or hundreds of thousands of times how beautiful it is. What would you say have been some of the more unusual responses, reactions you've had from people when they've read or listened to you?
It's funny. What springs to mind is the most usual, which is that people say that I have expressed something that they felt and couldn't articulate. Mm. And that's so common, a comment, that it really tells me, and from all around the world, different cultures, you know, all over the place, and it tells me that our central core longing is very common in human beings, you know, that what we want, the intimacy we want to live with ourselves and others, is obviously very core. You know, the variety has been, there have been a few strange emails where people have held me responsible for the ending of their marriage or engagement or something. I once got a letter from a man who said, well, the woman I was about to marry read your poem and then went and got the book, and then she broke off the engagement. And he was furious. You're ruining people's lives. And the odd thing was, the next week I got a letter from her mother, from the mother of the bride-to-be, saying, thank you, thank you, thank you. Now, of course, I can neither take credit nor blame for this. either way, you know. I tried as gently as possible to say to the man, you know, I hear you're in excruciating pain, and I'm sure as time passes, it will occur to you that it wasn't reading something that made her break the engagement, you know. But people clearly, you know, one way or another, feel some kind of resonance with it. A lot of people do. And that surprised me. I mean, I had not anticipated that.
Mm-hmm. I have a sense, Araya, especially as I hear you read this in your own voice, that you wrote this for yourself, truly. Is that the case?
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, I'd have to say that all the writing I do is for myself first. Mm-hmm. You know, publishers are very fond of saying, who's your reader? Picture your reader. And I'm picturing myself. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm writing what I need to hear, what I need to express, and what I need to hear.
Yeah. 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 There's a Rumi quote on your site. In fact, because I just got a note from the producer saying we're down under 5 minutes now, and I know that will quickly go away. So let me just make a point here to make sure that everyone listening today and in the future can find you at OriaMountainDreamer.com. And that's Oriah with an H, OriaMountainDreamer.com. Find out all about these books and various blogs and various ways you can experience Araya. But Araya, at the bottom of the front page, it says here by Rumi, there are lovers content with longing. I'm not one of them. That was significant enough for you to put it right on your front page. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, the invitation, the poem in the book, is really about the longing. And so I have tremendous faith in our longing if we go deep enough with it. We have to be careful here because advertisers know what our longing is like, too. And so, you know, our longing for peace is portrayed to us in a car going along a coastal highway with no other traffic. So, you know, we have to be careful that we don't think it's the car that's going to give us that. But I do have tremendous, it's like an inner guidance system, you know, the thing that we really, the soul of us aches for. But we could get stuck there, you know, kind of stuck in the daydream of imagining what that would be like, as opposed to living very close to that and bringing that to each moment. If what we long for is intimacy, then we can be intimately with the moment wherever we are, as it is right now. Now, some of those moments are easier than others. Mm-hmm. But really, the dance was, okay, I'm clear about what I ache for, what I long for, but I'm not so clear about how I live true to that. Mm-hmm. And that's really why that translation from Coleman Barks, you know, that there are lovers content with longing. I'm not content with just longing. I want to live that.
Yeah. That's beautiful. And you know, Araya, we're down to under 2 minutes now, and I just wish we had longer. So maybe someday, oh, and by the way, I mentioned as the show started, it's Friday the 13th. I feel particularly lucky because as you said before the show started, I caught you at a weak moment and you said yes. And I want to make sure and say thank you for that. Thank you for being weak just for a minute so I could get you on our show.
It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, so appreciate that. And since we have just a minute left, why don't you tell me, or tell all of us, if you have any further thoughts for us, those fellow travelers of us who have had a chance now to share a few notes from the road, just what should we do this weekend? How should we be present with ourselves fully?
Well, you know, I mean, the old wisdoms are there for a reason, which is to say that the easiest way to be present is to anchor yourself in the breath. And, you know, without a lot of highfalutin ideas, you set your watch or some other kind of thing for every couple of hours, and when it goes off, you take 3 deep breaths and follow your breath in and out of your body, and that'll bring you present.
Yeah. All right, I hear the music, which will shut us down, but thank you so much. I wish you a wonderful weekend, and we hope to someday catch you week again so you'll come back.
My pleasure, Jacob. Thank you so much.
All right, my friends, you've heard Araya Mountain Dreamer. Thanks for being with us. We encourage you to do as you always do on the weekend. Go get your shine on. Take care.